Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I thought it was a great event at Moda Center over the weekend, culminating yesterday with the regional final in the women's NCAA basketball tournament. A lot of people know the backstory, some don't, of how that event got here, but it started 3 years ago when the Trailblazers and their vice president, who's in charge of the building, Chris Oxley, called up Oregon State and Zach Lassiter, the deputy AD there, and sort of got the ball rolling for a bid that brought three NCAA tournament events to the state. Women's regional this year, women's regional next year, and in 2022, the men's first and second rounds. But what's next? Zach Lassiter, Deputy Athletic Director at Oregon State, joining us now. Hey, congratulations to you guys as the hosts of that event. That was a pretty damn good event.
Thanks, John. Always good to talk. Yeah, great, great showcase of women's basketball for sure. And got the attention of a lot of people, I think, locally, regionally, and nationally.
Does any mixed feelings like when you know, first of all, 11,000 plus tickets sold, which is amazing. But a lot of people keep saying, well, it was that way because Oregon was in it. There were 7,000 tickets sold before the brackets even came out.
Yeah, let me make clear. I'm a Beaver, right? So my loyalty is to Oregon State first and foremost. And we did sell 7,000 tickets before the regional was announced, and we saw where those tickets were being purchased. And they were purchased by Ducks and Beavers. They're also purchased by people in Portland that love women's basketball and wanted to support the championship. I think once the teams were determined, and obviously with Oregon being there, I think those tickets made their way from folks to Oregon fans, and they deserve credit for showing up. But I think this event was much more than just about Oregon and Oregon State. It was about having a regional in Portland, Oregon that drew more than a regional in New York with UConn women's basketball. And this was the top attended regional in the country. And if you take the last two regionals in the West combined, it wouldn't equal what we did on Friday and Sunday. So it's a big deal. And obviously, you know, it was also a great basketball game. Credit to both Mississippi State and Oregon for putting on a really, really good game.
The chair of the NCAA women's tournament, Rhonda Bennett, was there. I talked to her on her way out of the building, and she said, hey, that was a phenomenal showing by people here. She's from Hillsboro. She understands the region. I think that's a big advantage to us in the region. But will this event be used by potential bid for a Final Four to show, like, hey, look what we did at a regional?
I think it's another example of that it's possible. I mean, I think you see the support of women's basketball here in the West. You see the quality of the Pac-12 conference. It really, there hasn't been a city out West that stood up and raised their hand and said, hey, you know, we want to put on this event. We have the resources and the facility and the hotels and the community behind it. I think this has got people's attention to say, why not Portland? If you look at it, it's the highest profile annual women's athletic event in our country. And it's not something that can just be handed to you. There's a lot of cities that want to be a part of this. No Western city has had the ability to do that. I think Portland's put itself at the front of that list based on what we did this past few days. But I don't think it was just these few days. You look at regular attendance at Gill and other places in the Northwest. You see the Pac-12 tournament in Seattle and its success. I think this is just cementing the fact that this is a really, really good place to put on a championship like this.
Zach Lassiter, Deputy Athletic Director of Oregon State, is with us. They were the host of the regional, the women's NCAA basketball tournament, the West Regional. Give us an idea of how, like, the genesis of this bid, because, you know, I've talked to you, but I don't think a lot of people know the story. Chris Oxley with the Trailblazers, VP there, he picks up the phone. What happens next?
Yeah, well, so I got here about 3.5 years ago, and one of the things in listening to folks at Oregon State was, you guys are doing great things in Corvallis, but you got to be out and about, and you got to be a contributing member of the Portland community. And we took that to heart. And one of the things, you know, we heard from Chris and others is Portland wants to be a destination for major sporting events. And I said, well, that's great, because we have experience doing that. You know, we think we have a pretty compelling case of why we're the right partner to do that. And so when the opportunity came up and Chris mentioned, you know, these championships, we talked about where alignment was, we said, why not? But we had to obviously put that together, and then we had to convince folks nationally to take a chance on Portland, because it wasn't as though it had a long history in this sense. But when we put the bid together and said, hey, we're not only willing to do men's basketball, but we're also committed to supporting the women's basketball championship as well, I think that got the attention of folks nationally. And we said, hey, why not? Now, I don't think we realized we'd get 3 championships in 4 years, but it's a good problem to have. And it's something that obviously we just got through our first one, and we feel really good about, set the bar pretty darn high. But it's something that I think there's a lot of alignment between what the players wanted to do and what we wanted to do, and this was the way that we could help.
Zach Lassiter with us from Oregon State. Is it a foregone conclusion that there will be a bid for a Final Four? I know that process isn't open. I know that they're scheduled through 2024. 2025 would be the soonest it could happen. What is the timeline? What have the discussions been to this point?
Yeah, it's probably premature to say there absolutely will be one. I think there's a lot of people that now it's on their radar, and you can't do this alone. You know, Jim Edsel and the Oregon Sports Authority, I think, will take a pretty heavy look at this. We'll need to include a lot of local political and corporate leaders to decide whether this is important. Because as big as the regional was, the Final Four requires a lot more pieces to it. So I think there's interest in it, but there's a lot of people in Portland that have to raise their hand, along with the partnership that we've created with the Sports Authority, with the Moda Center and Travel Portland, and say, hey, we're willing to help too. If all those things align, then I think there's a really good chance, but it's not a foregone conclusion at this point.
What goes into being the host? Like, is it just mean you get a good ticket, or you got to do some work?
Well, like any great NCAA event, there's a multiple page manual, right? that we get. I think this one might be 130 pages.
That's ridiculous.
And so they're very particular about, you know, what they're looking for. And so we're not making every decision. You know, we're there to make sure the championship goes well, and we have local resources and staff that are willing to put in time and effort to make it happen. But like you mentioned, the NCAA selection committee members, there are 3 members of the committee that were out there making sure things were going smoothly. But there's core competence that we have as an athletic department. We put on championships, like, for example, we put on the women's first and second round here in Corvallis 2 weeks ago, and we're about to embark on the gymnastics regional championship this year this week in Corvallis. So we're used to running championships of this magnitude, but there are other pieces in play. But it's not something we want to make sure, again, first and foremost, we're doing our job at Oregon State. But if there's a way that we can also help Portland and help bring these events, then we want to lend that expertise.
Zach Lassiter with Oregon State. I know that, you know, the Beavers women's program got to the Sweet 16. That's all Scott Ruick does is win games. You see Oregon in a Final Four. I got to think, if you're a little girl in the state of Oregon, you got a whole bunch of role models to choose from. That's pretty cool.
And no doubt. I mean, if you think about where women's basketball was in the state, you know, 10 years ago to where it is now, where, you know, obviously our Oregon State women's program went to 4 straight Sweet 16s, right? And we're talking about Sweet 16 as a good season, not a barrier that we haven't gotten across. So I think it's only going to continue to grow. And it's a great example, like I said. I think a lot of attention in college athletics gets to football and men's basketball, and they're important. But there's a lot of things that college athletics does to create opportunities for women and around college sports to play. But now you're also seeing the support from the community. And I think that's something pretty special, something we should be proud about in our state.
Zach Lassiter with us. Before I cut you loose, you know, you guys across the board in sports have a lot of things to be proud of. But I think, you know, Ruick's season, building that fan base. Now you see University of Portland. What did they do? They went out and hired the guy that replaced Ruick at George Fox. It's kind of cool to see somebody following what Oregon State's blueprint is, isn't it?
Well, and I have a soft spot. I'm a Willamette Bearcat graduate.
See?
So the idea that there's not high-level basketball coaching at small schools in the Pacific Northwest, I know from firsthand experience how great that is. But, yeah, it's certainly neat to watch. And we got Pat Bailey, too, right? So our current baseball coach, obviously a George Fox graduate. But there's something, I think, special about our state that when you have one of our own that comes up and leads a program who appreciates the university, appreciates this area, and then wins, it means even more. And that's the fun thing, I think, working about Oregon State and being a part of here, is that I think when we can find that right fit, a lot of the great success that we've had at Oregon State or other programs across the state, it means even more when it's an Oregonian that's at the helm.
Zach Lassiter, thank you, man, for making time for us, and let's get that Final Four here.
All right, thanks, John. I appreciate all your support.
All right, there he is. Oregon State playing a role in Oregon having a home game. If Oregon State had not stepped up to be a host for that West Regional, that might have been Denver, that might have been San Jose, that might have been Sacramento. I don't know if it would have been the same outcome for the Oregon Ducks. And by the way, University of Portland taking Michael Meek as their new women's basketball coach. He is the person who replaced Scott Ruick at George Fox. All he did at George Fox is win a billion games and lose very few. And Michael Meek, we wish him the best at University of Portland. Up next, we'll go national with George Schroeder, USA Today. He was at one of the regionals. He's going to help us break down the Final Four. And I'm going to tell you about a Final Four bracket contest. Yeah, you can throw away your bracket and start over. We've got a Final Four bracket contest to talk about. George Schroeder, USA Today, breaks it down next.
Kentucky needs a miracle. Here comes Hagan. Throws through Washington, a three-pointer shot, no good. Rebound down to Harper. And he puts it away. He's dribbling the clock away. For the first time ever, Auburn is going to the Final Four. In overtime, Auburn knocks off Kentucky 77-71.
There it is. Auburn, the first Final Four in university history. I want to bring on George Schroeder, USA Today. George, how are you, man?
Man, I'm good. Decompressing after a really nice Elite Eight weekend and kind of hoping we get the same kind of matchups and entertainment out of the Final Four.
A lot being made today of the absence of the top 100 2018 prospects, that these are all veteran teams that were very mentally tough. Is that oversimplifying or do you agree with that?
I'd like to say yes to both because It's a little bit oversimplification in that the ball bounces funny sometimes, and I know it's round, so it doesn't really bounce funny. But, you know, we were just a couple of different shots and calls and whatever else away from Duke and Kentucky both being in there. Obviously, they're sort of the premier one-and-done type of people, Duke being the poster children for it this year. It easily could have been them in the Final Four, and we wouldn't be having this discussion. But there's definitely a case to be made that having a veteran team with upperclassmen who maybe didn't have quite the same star rating out of high school in terms of the recruiting rankings is a more tried and true formula. And it definitely bears out, especially bears out right now when you look at like a Texas Tech in there, for example, or the way Tony Bennett recruits at Virginia, you know, even Auburn too, and Michigan State. You know, the Goins kid who hit the go-ahead three-pointer is a fifth-year senior who started as a walk-on. So, I mean, there's definitely something to be said for that. But all that said, you know, things have bounced just a little bit differently. We might have half the Final Four filled up by the two foremost programs for the one-and-dones.
What makes Auburn good? You got a chance to see him up close. What makes him go?
Well, first of all, the two guards are terrific. Bryce Brown and then Jared Harper, they combined for 50 of the 77 points. Harper had 12 of the 17 in overtime. And they're quick, fearless, and you know, can score on you. And they're also really pesky defensively. And Auburn's kind of a throwback team to the days when people pressed you full court all the time and really got in your grill. We don't see that as much. And then they force the pace offensively. And I would say this for all of the Auburn team, the entire Auburn team just has no conscience. They will let it fly from anywhere all the time. That didn't prove out against Kentucky. They're actually pretty smart. When Kentucky closed out the three, they went inside. But I just love the fact that they don't care and they'll shoot it from anywhere all the time. And there's apparently no such thing as a bad three-pointer for them. But I think it's those two guards. The two guards make them go. It might be the best backcourt in the country.
George Schroeder with us, USA Today. I look across and you see a representative from the ACC, from the SEC, from the Big 12. You know where I'm going, the Big 10. Pac-12's not in this thing and hasn't had they've had only one appearance in the decade in the Final Four.
Yeah. Thank the Ducks for that one, right?
Accidental? What's going on?
No, I don't think it's accidental. I mean, well, first of all, it's UCLA's got to play better basketball. Arizona's got to play better basketball. Obviously, UCLA's in the middle of a coaching search, and Arizona could be in one at some point here. But your two bell cows have to be the bell cows, first of all. It's great that Oregon goes, if you're talking about it from a Pac-12 perspective, but that needs to be an add-on. You know, the big deal, it's a little bit like, remember when the Big 12 football was in an existential crisis? When Oklahoma sort of carried the load, and now Texas looks like it's on its way back, all of a sudden they feel a lot better about themselves. So you need USC to be really good in football in the Pac-12, and you need the basketball powers to be really good in basketball. And then if the Oregons of the world and the Washingtons of the world and whoever else is of the world are good, that's terrific. But you've got to have the traditional programs, those top 5, 10, 15 programs of all time, have got to be good. And I don't know if and when that's going to change. I think that's the big problem.
I look across this Final Four and I go, okay, you got Tony Bennett at Virginia, you got Izzo at Michigan State. Obviously, you know, you look at Texas Tech and they're the team maybe nobody saw coming, and then you got Bruce Pearl in Auburn. He's the only one mentioned in this NCAA corruption scandal. Does that become a story between now and when these games get played?
Well, yes, and it kind of depends on whether or not you want your email inbox filled with stuff from Auburn fans, I guess, because Nancy Armour, my colleague at USA Today, wrote about him in advance of the Sweet 16 round that we just, you know, finished in Kansas City, and took a ton of heat for it. But I think she wrote the right thing, which is, you know, he sort of symbolizes the rot that's in college hoops. I say that, and I don't know what makes Bruce Pearl any different than a whole lot of other guys, quite frankly. So I don't know why we have why we necessarily single him out. Although I will say this, I think out of that group of guys, Tony Bennett might be one of the best men coaching in the NCAA. I think that's what Tony Bennett is. He is just terrific as a person before we ever talk about as a basketball coach. So, I mean, if it was me, I'd prefer to like go, let's focus on him. But yes, it does feel like what among these things is different? Well, Izzo hasn't been accused of significant NCAA violation. Chris Beard has not either, and I don't have any reason to suspect he will. But he's, you know, 4 years ago, he was the coach at Angelo State, a Division II school in Texas. So it's not like he's got a big track record. But if you look at his teams, you look at his team right now, it's a bunch of three-stars and transfers. So, and the one thing I would say about Bruce Pearl is this. The FBI scandal part of it touched an assistant in Chuck Person, who was a former Auburn standout, obviously. It didn't appear to be the kind of thing where it was the systemic deal where they're trying to get recruits, the kind of stuff that we think might get Sean Miller at some point, that might touch Bill Self at Kansas at some point. It appeared to be more of the Chuck Person cutting side deals with agents to sort of funnel the players who are already on campus to the agents. It didn't appear to be a Bruce Pearl thing, if I'm going to be fair to Bruce.
We're talking to George Schroeder, USA Today. I saw the stat today. Only 0.2% of people correctly predicted the Final Four. What do you think of it now? Who do you like to play for the national championship?
Oh, wow. Well, by the way, I had one of the teams, and it was Texas Tech.
You saw them coming.
I did see them coming, and that may be because, you know, I'm located sort of geographically these days in the Big 12 footprint, so I see them kind of by osmosis a little more often than you would others, and their defense was so good. But I didn't feel great about it because I thought the Zags were terrific, and let's be honest, they were terrific. That's another one of those, the ball bounces differently and you never know what happens. But I think I like Virginia believe it or not. All of a sudden, based on who's in the Final Four opposite them, I think they will close out the threes and protect the middle and have the quickness at guard a little bit more to deal with the Auburn guards more than Kentucky had. So I think they have a shot to shut down Auburn and get to the finals. And then I don't really know. To me, Michigan State and Texas Tech is going to be a crazy fun game, a little bit like the Michigan-Texas Tech game was in the Sweet 16. I don't know who comes out of that, but I just think maybe this is the year for the Cavs to do it and to do it with a team that, you know, I think we wrongly say, oh, they're not as athletic as other guys. Oh, they play, you know, it's all because of their style of play. This is a more athletic team than we've seen Tony Bennett have at Virginia. And I think maybe given what else is in the field, there's a decent shot they go win it.
George Schroeder, USA Today. Before I cut you loose, you mentioned Bennett. You got Izzo at Michigan State. I wondered about the 5 to 6 day preparation period between the end of the Elite Eight and the start of the Final Four. Is there an advantage to any one of these coaches? Like, is there a guy where you go, oh, you just gave Tom Izzo 5 days of preparation? Like, which of those coaches do you think can make the biggest impact with the delay?
Well, let me say this. Not against Chris Beard, I don't say that.
Yeah.
When they had 5 days to prepare for Tony Benford, the LSU interim coach, I absolutely thought, yeah, this is not going to go well for the Tigers. And it didn't. They lost by 17. It wasn't that close. But Chris Beard, look, he's got a five-year, what is he, maybe 5 years as a head coach total. So it's not like he has a bunch of accomplishments on his resume. But there are a whole lot of people that think he's one of the top coaches right now who you'd line up X's and O's against the next guy. They think he's one of those guys that fits in that conversation. I think that's correct. But when I look at all four of these guys, and I think you've got four big-time X's and O's guys. I don't see a giant matchup disparity like we sometimes see in these situations where when a team gets out. And that includes Auburn. Obviously, they've gotten really, really hot. They've won 12 in a row. And whatever anybody thinks about how Bruce Pearl operates outside the lines is – his X's and O's skills, I think, are really, really good too. I'm not trying to be wishy-washy. I just don't see that decided edge. I guess I would give it to Bennett over Pearl, but I wouldn't give an edge to either one of them in the other matchup. And if I was going to, it might be Chris Beard.
George Schroeder, you're the best. I appreciate you making time for us.
Hey, thanks, man. I look forward to seeing you sometime.
I know people in Eugene, they miss you like hell, and people in the state of Oregon as well. So are you going to the Women's Final Four? You want to go see Sabrina Ionescu, or are you going to Minneapolis?
Let me tell you, I wish I could. It'd be a lot of fun. I've gotten a chance to watch the Oregon women's team a couple times, you know, and really like what I see. And I think I'm sure it's tremendous fun for the folk in Oregon, too. They could go win this thing. They're, you know, obviously, we don't even know who they're going to play yet. That gets decided today.
But I think they get Baylor. Probably
yeah,
Baylor.
Yeah, I do, too. I'm guessing. And that's a really good Baylor team. But I think they could win it. And how cool would that be? But just getting to the Final Four, you know, obviously, especially given where that program came for, is terrific. I'm going to Minneapolis and answer your question. I would love to be able to go to Tampa for a variety of reasons, including the climates of those places in early April. But
yeah.
But I'm going to Minneapolis.
85 in Tampa. All right, George, I appreciate you, man.
All right, hey, thank you.
There he is, USA Today's George Schroeder. All right, Oregon Live's got a four-team bracket. If you want to pick the Final Four, you can do that. And they've got a multiple tiebreakers. You go to OregonLive.com/bracket. You can enter now. You didn't have to be in line all along. You could fill out a Final Four bracket. All right, leave it here. Our golf update brought to you by the Reserve.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.